دنیای ما، جامعه ما.
Our world, our community with Debbie Amini.
سلام عرض می کنم و خوش آمدید دارم خدمت شنوندگان عزیز که در این ساعت از برنامه با ما همراه هستند. من دبی امینی هستم. تبریکی دارم به مناسبت روش هاشانه سال نوی عبری. امیدوارم که سالی توام با صلح، آرامش و سلامتی کامل برای تمامی مردم دنیا باشه. در این برنامه از دیوید ترنر از اینر سیتی استراگل دعوت کردم که نظرشون رو راجع به اعتراضات اخیر دفاع از بلک لایوز با ما در میون بگذارند. دیوید ترنر is the manager of the Brothers Sons Selves working to end the school to prison pipeline. Growing up, David recognized the need for change as many of his family members were impacted by the war on gangs. His doctoral candidate in the social and cultural studies at UC Berkeley, where his research focuses on youth-based social movements and political identity. As an activist and political educational specialist, he has participated in the movement for Black Lives. He has published articles in Abolition, a Journal of Insurgent Politics, Journal of Critical Studies on Higher Education and Student Affairs. Mr. Turner, welcome to today's interview.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure to have you. As you know, there are different levels of racism in a country. Worst scenario is when the government and the laws are against a group of people. The better situation is when the laws are based on equality, but there are still some people who are biased. And another scenario is when the victims of racism still carry the scars which affect their current lives. Which scenario is the case currently in America?
Well, to be honest, the way I see it, all three are still happening simultaneously, right? It's not as if it's been a progression. I mean, they've been pretty consistent all throughout, right? To give you a very quick example of what this looks like, right? If you look at, let's say, for example, public schools, right? And there's one particular policy in public schools called willful defiant school suspension, right? Now, when you're considered to be, quote unquote, willfully defiant, that means that, you know, you may be wearing a hat when a teacher said don't wear a hat. You may be chewing gum or maybe eating a snack or something like that. And then students get suspended from school for that. Right. Now, hello.
Yes, I'm listening. Go ahead.
Yeah. So while that law, right, may sound like common sense, one of the problems, right, is that students are being suspended from school, right, for very, very minor infractions. And that particular policy disproportionately affects Black and Latino students, especially boys. Right.
The rule should be general for all the students, correct? So that should be the law. Why does it affect Black students or Hispanic students more than the others?
Well, so that's why I said all three of these things are happening simultaneously, right? Mm-hmm. So suspending students for willful defiance, right, didn't necessarily become a thing until after schools became integrated here in California, right? So that's stage one. Stage number two, right? There are still a lot of teachers who maintain implicit biases against Black and Latino students, especially boys, right? And stage three, right, you know, there aren't really tools or mechanisms for either teachers or students to be able to build and address relationships, right, especially relationships that have been, you know, really strenuous over time. So with that being said, right, like all three are happening simultaneously. And that is a very small example, right, of what that may look like.
I see. So the Black Lives Matter movement helps with which one of these scenarios? All three or maybe just one or two?
Well, the Black Lives Matter movement, or what we call it, the Movement for Black Lives, right? Like it addresses all three, right? I think the first part, okay, right, is by addressing laws, policy, and practice, really works to get at how the system itself, right, is structurally racist. The second part, or the second stage, right, really begins to address a lot of that implicit bias, right? Really begins to address a lot of the ways in which our culture in and of itself is steeped deeply in racism, particularly anti-Black racism. And third, when we look at that third stage, right, like Black folks have historical trauma that quite frankly breeds a very strong distrust in the system. Right. So the Movement for Black Lives is working to address all of these things in a lot of very different ways.
I see. Do you think that this movement is actually to eliminate racism in general, or is it just about defending Black lives? Like, in other words, racism continues to exist, but now it's Black people's turn to be the superior ones.
Well, I honestly don't think anybody in on our side of the movement wants Black people to be oppressors, right?
Mm-hmm.
No one, mm-hmm. no one wants Black folks to be oppressors. If anything, what we want, what we have been demanding for the longest, has been, you know, just to be treated like human beings, right? To have access mm-hmm. to what other human beings have access to, right? To be seen as full, living, breathing, you know, complicated, but still, you know, whole humans, right? Like, that is what the movement is about. The movement, it has been and continues to be about recognizing the humanity in people, right? So to be explicit, right, like, when we start talking about eliminating racism, right, well, we can't do that if we don't look at something called the intersections or intersectionality, right? Mm-hmm. Intersectionality is how different identities intersect, right, and how people may be considered vulnerable based on how those identities intersect. So to give you an example, right, like we often think about immigration and immigrant rights as a thing that primarily targets Latinos and specifically Mexican folks who immigrated to the United States. Now, what the Movement for Black Lives would suggest, right, is that there are Black immigrants who also come to the United States from Latin America, from, you know, other parts of the Caribbean, from the continent of Africa, and these Black immigrants who are coming from these places are deeply, deeply impacted not only by our racist immigration system, but also anti-Black racism and over-criminalization. Right. So mm-hmm. So when we look at how Black folks in that particular aspect are impacted, right, and we try to work at that intersection, right, that benefits other people. It benefits other groups by being able to do so.
I agree with what you just explained, but the only reason that I ask this question and makes me concerned is that in some of the protests, we hear death to Jews, death to police, even death to America. And I know that, you know, that the actual protest is what you just described. Well, what do you think about those people who chant against other races, other group of people?
Well, I'm not sure I understand your question. Are you asking me, are there people at protests who are actively against other groups?
Yes. That's exactly what my question is.
I've never been to a demonstration or a protest that was organized by anyone in the Movement for Black Lives that mm-hmm. was vehemently against, right, other groups. If you've seen some of the images and the photos right? Like from some of these demonstrations, these are very diverse demonstrations, right? These demonstrations have white folks, black folks, Southeast Asian folks, Latinx folks, Native folks, right? All there, right, in defense of black folks and, you know, to combat, you know, racism, anti-black racism specifically. I've never been to a demonstration where people were intentionally, right, were intentionally trying to create tension between other racial groups. If anything, I've been to more demonstrations where people have been trying to work to build interracial solidarity.
That's good. So as an organizer and a leader, you condemn of those kinds of discrimination.
I mean, absolutely. I don't think that type of work is productive, right, for our movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think to be quite honest, again, I've never seen that. I've never seen it happen at a demonstration. I've never seen it happen in any of the organizing circles that I've been in, right? What I think is important, right, is that we continue to move together in solidarity. And I think also, too, making sure that we work on the critical issues that intersect, right, so that way we can liberate everyone.
That's good to know. So from what I'm hearing, do you feel that this movement was kind of hijacked by rioters and looters, or actually those actions were needed and necessary to obtain the attention and serve the right cause in the movement?
Well, I honestly think that when people often talk about rioting and looting, what they're really talking about is this idea of, well, why are people being violent? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I always try to make sure that we turn back to, right, is, well, what would spark someone to think that that was their only option? What would spark someone to think that was even something that they could do? Right. And as Martin Luther King would say, a riot is the language of the unheard. Right. So to give you an example of what that looks like here in California, there was a Senate bill that just died. Right. It's Senate Bill 731. It was the Police Decertification Act. Right. Community groups have been advocating over and over and over again for some way to have police accountability. And we have elected officials here in the state of California, some of whom voted for it, a lot of whom voted against it. Right. So, you know, people felt as if their voices aren't heard. Right. Here in the Los Angeles County, right, we have a district attorney who absolutely refuses to prosecute a killer cop. Right. And, you know, that right now there are 622 cases since 2013 of police violence. And right with these cases, some of these cases, you have children being hit by cop cars and being dragged for blocks. Right. You have people being shot in shopping malls, and there's never been an indictment. So I think before we even talk about, right, like the violence or what people may have been are rioters or looters, I think the violence that the people are experiencing would make anyone upset. And it is hard to just sit here and take that when the system refuses, right, absolutely refuses to hear what the people are saying, right? So what I would recommend or what I would suggest, right, is that those rioters and looters, right, like when things start to burn, right, it actually brings attention to the issue. It shouldn't have to be that way. It absolutely shouldn't have to be that way, and I don't think anybody wants it to be that way. But the problem is that if that's the only way people can get attention, right, and if people want to value buildings before they value people, I think that is a part of the problem. And that is what the protesters, the demonstrators, the organizers in this movement have been working to highlight and discuss.
I hear you. So let me just translate a little bit for our audience. من از دوست عزیزمون آقای دیوید ترنر پرسیدم که در مورد مراحل مختلفی که در مورد تبعیض و نژادپرستی وجود داره، مرحله اول وقتی که خود دولت و قوانین کشور و سده گروهی از مردم هستن، و مرحله دوم وقتی که قوانین مساوی و عادلانه است ولی عده‌ای از مردم عقاید نژادپرستی دارند، و بعد مرحله‌ای که فقط قربانیان دوران بردگی الان با توجه به زخم‌هایی که دارن واکنش نشون میدن و نمیتونن زندگی نرمال یا به صلاح خودمون هنجاری داشته باشن، و ایشون برای نقیده هستن که در حال حاضر در کشور آمریکا هر سه مرحله هنوز هم ولید هست، هر سه تا رو متاسفانه دارن مردم تجربه میکنن. بعد سوال بعدی از این بود، راجبه این بود که آیا این حرکت Black Lives Matter کمک میکنه به هیچ کدوم از این سه کاندیشن، و ایشون گفتن که امید بر این هست که بتونه به همه این شرایط بهبود ببخشه، و توقع کسایی که در این موومنت شرکت کردن فقط این هست که بتونن زندگی مثل دیگران داشته باشن، در حد تساوی با دیگران باشن، تبعیض کسی برای اونها قائل نشه، ولی به هیچ وجه منظور اینو ندارن که بخوان گروه های دیگر و یا نژادهای دیگر رو پایین ببرن و خودشون یه حالت برتری داشته باشن بر نژادهای دیگه. و بعد در مورد هرج و مرج و غارتی که در عین این شورش ها اتفاق افتاد ازشون پرسیدم، ایشون فرمودن که دوست داشتن که کسی مجبور نمیشد دست به هرج و مرج و غارت بزنه، ولی به نظر میرسه که تنها راهی بوده که این افراد داشتن برای اینکه بتونن توجه دیگران رو بگیرن و برای اینکه بتونن حرفشون رو به جایی برسونن، برای اینکه هستن کسایی که حاضر نیستن در راه از بین بردن نژادپرستی و کوتاه دیدن و کم دیدن سیاه‌پوستان آمریکا کاری انجام بدن و قدم مفیدی بردارن و به اونها حق زندگی رو در حد سفیرهای آمریکا بدن. Thank you so much. I tried to translate as fast as I could, which brings me to my next question. Do you feel that the ideal results are about to be achieved should the protests continue?
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
I was asking that, do you think that the protests are actually helping? They are getting somewhere. And do you feel that they should continue until the goal and the results are achieved?
Absolutely. I absolutely think that the demonstrations have opened up a broader national conversation about systemic racism, about inequality. And quite frankly, the very explicit call for defunding the police, right? One of the biggest issues, right, that we have as a society right now is that we have a society that doesn't like to deal with social problems. We just want to throw these problems away. And we throw all of our money, all of our dollars at policing and incarceration as opposed to dealing with these very real social issues, right? So to give you an example, again, as I had mentioned earlier, there was a man, a Mac, who was killed in a shopping mall, right? He was having a mental health episode, and what he needed at the time, right, was somebody to look after and care after him. What he got, right, was some shots from LAPD's Metro Division, right? Now, instead of him being shot and killed, right, like what would it have looked like if there would have been, you know, a mental health worker to come calm him down and then make sure that he had the access to the resources that he needed in order to succeed, right? So one of the things that we have achieved here in the city of Los Angeles is we've achieved a $150 million cut to the LAPD police budget. In addition to that, right, a motion has been introduced and passed to city council, right, which is going to create a body for unarmed, non-law enforcement intervention workers, right, to be emergency first responders. Right. So what would it look like for when emergencies happen? You know, somebody with a gun didn't necessarily need to handle that particular emergency. So as a matter of fact, yes, the things that we're asking for are being achieved, and we are winning. We are winning the moral argument, and we're winning the broader conversation. And yes, the protests absolutely should continue.
Mm-hmm. So one last question. Do you think that these will have an effect on people's view or judgment in the future? Again, I'm going to go with violence that they had to do. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have any riot or looting. As you said, they had to have that. But that and then defunding the police, which might cause problems somewhere else. Don't you think that this would make people unconsciously more biased when they witness riots, looting, defunding the police in the future?
Well, to be honest, I think people are going to benefit from it before they start to dislike it, right? To give you an example, here in the city of Los Angeles, right, 48% of police activity is spent on traffic, right?
Mm-hmm.
8% of all of the police activity, right, that was in a recent LA Times report, is actually spent on violent crime. So,
okay.
So what would our city look like, right, if we took those resources, put those into the intervention and supports, and then, right, like police could actually do the job that they're supposed to do, which is addressing real public safety concerns, right? Again, right, like I say that to say that I don't necessarily believe, right, that long term people are going to dislike this, right? To be honest, there were a lot of people in the 1960s and the 1950s who were not down with the civil rights movement, who did not agree with the civil rights movement. The vast majority of Americans, especially white Americans, hated Dr. King. But as history has progressed, right, like what we have seen is that the moral arc of justice has always went towards, right, the will of the people. And while people may not like it now, they will definitely benefit from it in the future.
Thank you so much. I want to just thank you one more time for dedicating your time and being with us today. Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.